I would like to start by just first saying thank you to the House for an invitation that extended for a number of projects, and for me personally comes to an end with this very one. And I would like to thank, of course, Bernd Scherer, who extended the invitation, and then to Katrin Klingan, who asked me to join her and Rana Dasgupta on this project. And it was a huge pleasure to work with the two of you. And now I have the great pleasure to announce the second thematic strand, that is the standard of civilization, which tonight begins to look at the history of continuity, and tomorrow continues with two sessions, one on law and war, and the other that will trace the narration from the right to trade to good governance. You just heard the bell, right? Me too. It feels like school. On the occasion of the Dutch general election last week, Dutch-Egyptian international political economist Sarah Salem, in her blog, Postcolonialism and Its Discontents, looked at how the political spectrum has shifted, as it has elsewhere, to the right. The shift to the right and its keying in on Islam, immigration, and economy, Salem argues, is presented as something new. She asks, and I quote, "What happens when we label something an emergence? What happens when Holland is categorized as having departed from its liberal, tolerant, reasonable past?" Her argument then goes on to unravel how, and I quote again, citizenship rules and regulations, categories of belonging, media, educational, and everyday semantics, all of these structures that organize daily life are thoroughly racialized. And this racialization, a racialized politics, is far from being new, she continues to argue, and goes on to trace their birth in the Dutch colonial empire and the role it played in nation building. Why I point to Sarah Salem's blog entry here is not to point to the case of the Netherlands as outstanding, as singular in its specificity, but because her look at historical continuity by means of looking at history's discontent resonates in what we address in the next few hours as the history of continuity of the standard of civilization. A user text to point out how the singular specificities of, for example, the Dutch case, are connected to a set of cultural paradigms whose universalism served to suppress the colonial past on the doctrinal level, in international law and in global policies. That is, the various national forms of forgetting or rewriting within former colonialist societies have a connection precisely within the construction of the nation state and the idea, for example, of the League of Nations, a global conglomeration of equals, in which, of course, not all are equal and not all were ever welcome to participate. This entire thematic strand is, of course, thoroughly indebted to Anthony Angi, who will take over from me in a minute. Angi has traced in his work the legacies of colonialism in international institutions and most prominently in international law. His analysis of imperialism, sovereignty, and nationalism in the frame of post-colonial realities have, for example, astutely argued for the decolonization of concepts such as good governance, one of the neologisms which inherit the semantics of the distinction between civilized and uncivilized. He has drawn attention to the dynamics inscribed in this distinction, which fuels the continuous production of technologies of power and of governing, aiming at normalization of the aberrant, the failed, the not yet there societies. He has argued that the positivism embedded in international law ignores the role of society, which is presented then solely as a function of sovereignty. This maneuver, he writes, and I quote, is crucial for the purpose of obscuring the understanding of society's operational role as a mechanism by which cultural assessments can be transformed into a legal status. To make it maybe a little bit more graspable, the Dutch version of colonial denial, the firmly upheld belief of the supposed neutral moral position on colonialism, is perfectly mirrored in the German context. We are gathered here in the city where in 1884-85, the so-called Berlin Conference, also known as the Congo Conference or Africa Conference, took place, in which Africa was divvied up between colonial powers, while Africans, of course, were excluded. This exclusion was made on the basis of the distinction between civilized and uncivilized. They were considered too primitive to understand the concept of sovereignty and thus to partake in these negotiations, as Enge describes in his book, Imperialism, Sovereignty, and the Making of International Law. At the Berlin Conference, he argues that Europe as a body went some way towards articulating a sort of philosophy of colonialism, a school of thought appropriate for the late 19th century. This included the updating of the much older idea of the civilizing mission into a humanitarian treatment of inferior and subject peoples. That is, while formally abolishing slave trade, it meant developing a new rhetoric, refining the cause for the colonial project and thereby ensuring its future. And just as Salem points to the Dutch self-fashioning as always having taken a neutral moral position on colonialism, in the German context, the Berlin Conference is remembered, if at all, as neutral in terms of Germany's colonial past. After all, this country was only the host for the event. But that, too, is part and parcel of a specific narrative of denial and of continuity. And as with the currency of this legacy in the Netherlands, so here, too, colonialism is either absent or addressed in the form of the Freudian kettle logic, the multiple denial which only affirms that which is supposed to be not there. Anthony Enge, Brigitta Kuster, David Scott, and Christian Niampeter all work towards unraveling colonial legacies and considering post-colonial presences, aiming not only at retracing connections, but also at retrieving other spaces in the frame of history's timelines. Brigitta Kuster, in her recent publication, Choix d'un passé, Transnationale Vergegenwärtigung kolonialer Hinterlassenschaften, Transnational Envisionings of Colonial Legacies, uses Avery Gordon, another speaker at our manifestation, Avery Gordon's concept, or rather method, of haunting to deal with the absent present of the colonial encounter in the German language context, which is haunted by ghosts that demand attention, our attention. I quote, wenn ein Gespenst einen konfrontiert, dann greift es Zukunft und Vergangenheit zugleich an. Und zwar beide nicht im Sinne ihrer Erscheinungsformen, die den Gebrauch von Daten und Zeitachsen impliziert, sondern als gelebte Zeit. When a ghost confronts us, it attacks future and past alike. Neither one in terms of its appearance, its manifestations, which implies the use of data and timelines, but is lived time. In this manner, Christian Niampeter's spatial contribution speaks to the importance of interrupting the logic of continuity. Thus, while speaking in the city of Berlin, the city of the Africa Conference, while becoming aware of the historical depth of the here and now, we also need to be aware how history itself needs to be critically studied. Since, I quote, nations emerge as the subjects of history, just as history emerges as the ground, the mode of being of the nation. That's from Prasenjit Dwara. This critical decentering, decolonizing or provincializing of the West's grasp on history, as well as historiography, has of course been going on for quite some time, replacing the assumption of Western power, which are increasingly untenable and no longer a reliable vantage point, with multiple perspectives on the past and present, as Pankaj Mishra has argued in From the Ruins of the Empire. So if we ask how to think beyond the nation-state frame, what comes after nations, and if we aim at unsettling the continuous influence of the paradigm of civilization in all its current articulations, we need to create the space for interruption, for hauntings, from the archive, as well as our present, the presence of something else. And now, welcome Anthony Enge.